Ahoy, ahoy, all you true sons and daughters. I'm John Miller, and this is Locked on Mizzou, your destination for partisan Missouri Tigers football and basketball talk 5 days a week. And thank you all so much for listening, as always. And most of all, thank you for putting up with Missouri sports in the past 2 or 3 weeks. My goodness. And joining me now, Pat Lynch, to talk all about it. We're going to talk about Barry Odom, his firing, the Mizzou football coaching situation. But of course, we have to start with the most timely thing, and that is Missouri losing 68-60 to Charleston Southern. Mr. Pat Lynch, who's joining me right now. Pat, what's going on? Give me your quick thoughts on the game just right off the top here.
Sure. Certainly, John, this is not the show I think we thought we'd be recording tonight. It's almost cliche at this point, but, like, this is why you can't let teams like this hang around. Like, this is, I mean, that was it right there. Like, you know, anybody can beat anybody for 10 minutes. And that's basically, we gave them the opportunity to beat us in the last 10 minutes of that game. I mean, that's the thing. If you let them hang around, you let them play close. You know, we had a chance. I really felt like we, you know, momentum had built in late in the first half. You know, we can talk about the start. I mean, the start is separate. You know, the sort of atrocious way in which Mizzou got
for the third straight game. Yeah,
right. And which, you know, obviously most concerning against a team like Chuck South. You know what I mean? Where credit to Butler and the Oklahomas of the world for, you know, being the Butlers and the Oklahomas of the world. But I mean, these guys. I mean, come on. You know, and but whatever. Okay. You know, they start unofficially, I think 1 of 13 is what I've had, but, you know, something like that. Momentum had built at the end of the first half, and they had built up a little bit of lead. And honestly, you know, the first few minutes of the second half looked like they had some moments. Tillman finally decided to join us, you know what I mean, and got going. And frankly, in a game like this that he just needs to dominate, you know, at a team like this, and it just wasn't there, save for that stretch where he scored about 10 points on his own straight.
Yep.
But, like, you know, you let him creep around. You let him creep around. You miss some shots. You miss some opportunities. And then they just start raining threes and they're out of the game. You know what I mean? And they hit all the big shots.
Yep, second half they were hitting the three.
Absolutely. And they hit all the big shots at all the big times because there were opportunities for them to win that game, and we gave it to them. So, yeah, really, I mean, really disappointing. I don't know what more you can say other than, boy, that's really disappointing. And I thought, you know, listen, I'm no fool. You know, I think, you know, and I, if anything, I probably have, you know, maybe a more bearish perspective on a lot of these things. And then, you know, listen, we still got a lot of ways to go with this program, with Conzo, with everything. But I thought we had kind of moved past this. You know, I mean, I thought that we had gotten over this kind of game against this kind of opponent, you know, at home, you know, and what should be, you know, kind of an easy put away. I mean, honestly, like on paper, one of the weaker teams on our schedule. And I mean, you know, yeah, I mean, they're better than, you know, Incarnate Word, and they're better than Chicago State, who we still have left. But, like, you know, they're not good. They're not as good as Northern Kentucky. I mean, they're not as good as Wofford. I mean, they're not. This should have been a win. This should have been an easy win. And I thought we had sort of gotten past this kind of performance, but I guess clearly haven't. And we'll see where it goes from here. But boy, that was disappointing to say the least.
Well, just in case you thought Vanderbilt or Wyoming in football was the most disastrous Mizzou loss of 2019, well, you have this past basketball game, because you know what? I would have probably called you about 5 minutes earlier and gotten this interview started then, but really quickly, I had the immediate thought as my dad and I were walking out of this game. We attended together, and frequent co-host of the show, Blake, texted me. We had basically the simultaneous thought, which is this Mizzou's worst loss since Kim Anderson's debut against UMKC? And I found out, well, based on going back through every single year of Missouri's KenPom statistical history, all the way back to 2002, back in the early days of the Quinn Snyder era. In fact, this is the worst loss Mizzou has suffered in the history of KenPom rankings. It's even worse than UMKC by the rankings. Now, I'll grant you, it's early in the season. We can quibble with small sample sizes, but Charleston Southern lost to Southern Utah 80-45. They lost to Furman 91-47. They lost to North Carolina A&T by 14. There's no other way to describe this other than an utter friggin' disaster, Pat. This is the worst loss of this millennium by Missouri basketball. It really is.
Yeah, and honestly, it's to the point where, like, when you start talking in those terms, it's like, does it even matter if it's the worst loss? Because the very fact that we're talking about whether it's the worst loss means it's the worst loss.
Of course.
You know what I mean? Like, that's exactly, you know, that's what it means. It's like, you know, not that I think anyone's going to be lining up looking to, like, really, you know, say, oh, no, it might only be our third worst loss.
Yeah.
No one cares.
Let's split those hairs.
Matter.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly.
This is a disaster. That's the point.
This is a Hall of Fame of bad losses. You know, there's room for many, and this is definitely a first ballot right here. And yeah, no, I mean, this is the place to get to it, but I thought this was just kind of interesting. So I was watching the game, and the statistic came up, pretty early, because they were talking about Mizzou's defense. Mizzou, Quandre Martin, 19-0. When we hold opponents under 60 points, which is, the stands to reason, obviously, you don't win most games, most teams will win most games, hold them under 60 points. And again, now every stat has context, and maybe this doesn't have all the right context. But if we're 19-0 when we hold an opponent under 60 points, we are 20-34 when they score more than 60 points. So, like, even the threshold of 60 points, we're 14 games under 500.
That's frightening.
A little bit, right. There's always going to be that mark where you're now underwater when a team scores X amount of points. For us, it's literally 60. It's like if a team scores more than 60 points, we have lost 14 more of those games than we've won. I think that speaks to a larger issue of, for the most part, the defense frankly kept us in this game in the first half. Now, upon further review, it didn't feel like it at the time, but the defense even gave us a chance to win. Butler or Oklahoma would have run us out shooting the way we did in the first half. That offense. I mean, if you can't bring it on Tuesday night against Charleston Southern, like, when are you going to bring it? I mean, that's horrifying, frankly.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And you know what? I want to get into a little bit about the tempo of this team in which it plays offense. And also, of course, the Missouri's coaching search here in just a little bit. But first, what? If you suffered through this game like I did, you know what? You should treat yourself to the meal you deserve and have your favorite restaurants come to you with DoorDash. Right now, our listeners can get $5 off their first order of $15 or more when you download the DoorDash app and enter promo code LOCKEDON. That's one word, locked on. Listening on the go, if you can't visit DoorDash right now, find this and all other offers from Locked On sponsors at LockedOnPodcast.com/offers. So, Pat, one thing that has bothered me a little bit about Konzo's teams is just how slowly they play offensively. But you know what? I could have given it a pass last year because really Jordan Geist was Missouri's main ball handler. Now, you could say, well, they had Xavier Pinson too, but clearly he wasn't quite ready for prime time as much as I love some of his ball skills and everything. But you know what? This year, when you've got Drew Smith, you've got Xavier Pinson, you've, in theory, got more ball handling than you've had in the past under Konzo Martin. Don't you think this team should play a little faster, especially against a team like Charleston Southern? I mean, I've seen tectonic plates move faster than the Missouri offense moved tonight. What's your take on that?
I was going to say it was a little glacial at this point. But no, I think, like, I understand the concept of wanting to do the thing the same way all the time because that's how you that's how you, you know, build the routine, and that's how you build it. You know, you never want to get out of your head, regardless of who your opponent is. But you're right, especially in a game like this, where, especially as the game starts getting closer, you know, and frankly turns into a, you know, must-win kind of situation, I feel like, you know, that speed and athleticism, that's what separates us from a team like Charleston Southern, you know? Not to say those guys aren't good athletes, whatever, they're D1 basketball players, but, like, you know, again, we, when it comes, you know, to, you know, the sort of, like, physical intangibles of the game, we have all the horses. And yet, if you don't let them run, you know, because you're right, like, you know, when you slow the game down, they want to slow the game down in a situation like that. Like, I think they're fine playing in a situation like that because they don't have to keep up with us. They don't have to try and, you know, catch us in transition, all these things like that. No, I agree. I think if you can find a way to play a little more variably with that, you know, there's times to play slow, you know, and sure, or slower, you know. And I don't want to say it in a, you know, a negative sense, because I think, listen, you know, there's Virginia will tell you all about pace and what it can do for you when you have a team that's well coached like that. So there's nothing wrong with playing slow, and there's definitely times to do it. But yes, I think in a situation like that, where that's a distinct advantage that you can hang over a team, then why not go for it and maybe again, or at least sort of, you know, kind of have that in your back pocket, you know, at least be able to sort of prepare yourself for that in the event that you you need to do that, which definitely I think would have helped tonight.
And just to be clear, what I'm suggesting here is not that they need to play like the 7 seconds or less Phoenix Suns or like Grinnell, right, College or something. I'm not, yeah, saying they have to absolutely force the tempo. But I just saw at times they had chances where if they would have just quickly either advanced the ball up court with a pass or just maybe dribbled it up quicker or something, we would have had a numbers advantage. And, you know, just this offense, again, we're just stuck in molasses right now. What's the we just need to get some easier transition action to me and just get some stuff where the offense, or I'm sorry, where the defense isn't set, because right now our offense is just way too content to play half court offense and be a jump shooting team when we've got about 3 or 4 guys that are in a deep slump from the outside right now.
Yeah, and I think, like, even just in general, like, when you are in that half-court set, like, I think you saw some of this, you know, during the tournament on KC, like, moving without the ball is a thing. Like, that, frankly, I don't know that we saw enough of last weekend. I think when we saw it last week, that is when things started to turn around in some of those games. But you're right, I think some of these times I feel like guys are standing around, like, I don't know, like, they're not quite, like, they're content to kind of pass around the arc, they're content to kind of, you know, sort of hang, but, you know, I think movement without the ball and then making sort of, you know, a little more quicker decisions and, you know, maybe looking for, you know, a shot a little earlier in the clock, it maybe get some, you know, positive results there. But you're right, I think when things really get bogged down, standing around, settle for jump shots. Again, you know, when you have a guy like Jeremiah Tillman in a game against Charleston Southern, like, he's got to touch the ball. I mean, I understand he sat out, you know, with the foul trouble at times, but, like, he's got to touch the ball more often, and you got to kind of work through him a bit too, because, I mean, that's an X factor that they don't have and I don't think, used enough.
Now, just getting a little bit more into Missouri shooting, Mark Smith has shot fine this season. He's had some hot games, maybe some cold games, but overall he's shooting, before coming into tonight anyway, he was about 39% from behind the arc. Well, I know that Xavier Pinson was about 1 of 15 or something like that. You know, Drew Smith was in the 20% range. Watson's really struggled. And I guess, yeah, you know, to me, at times, they haven't gotten terrible shots, and I guess what I'm wondering is it really just as simple as, do they just need some guys to get out of a slump here, or do you think they're – I know you were saying that they need more off-the-ball movement, and I totally agree, especially when Tillman catches the ball in the post. And we saw Javon Pickett a couple times, I thought, make some good cuts off of that post action, but – Is it more just, are we overanalyzing it? Do they just need to start making more shots? Is it really as simple as that?
Well, I think it's a little bit of both. I mean, yes, I think in some cases there's probably some guys who are just in a little bit of a funk, you know. And again, then when you have a night like tonight where Mark Smith was in a funk, you know, that's not helpful. Yeah, there was a spot at one point tonight where Watson took like a pretty crucial three-pointer kind of via late in that game, where I feel like, I don't remember whether it was Smith passed.
I wanted Mark to shoot it.
But yeah, I was going to say, whoever didn't shoot it.
It was Mark. I remember exactly what you were saying. My dad and I were both going, if we're going to take that shot, I wanted Mark to shoot it because he had a chance to kind of come off the screen and take a, you know, 2 feet behind the line kind of three. Instead, he passed it up on the right wing, and that's the shot Watson took. Yep.
And Watson was the only guy colder than Smith tonight. I mean, that was Watson was 0 for 7.
Yep.
Which is, you know. But, like, so I wish this is something where, and I'll have to see if I can get some numbers on this, and maybe we can talk about it at a future show. With the three-point line moving back this year.
Yeah.
Now, granted, it's not a huge jump back, but it's definitely pushed back a little bit. I believe that has been an adverse effect game-wide.
You're right.
3-point shooting percentage.
Well, I think the numbers overall bear that out, but it's really seemed to have affected Missouri.
Well, sure, but I guess.
But maybe, you know, again, maybe that's just small sample size deal. Who knows?
Yeah. Well, you know, but even then, I think where I'm going with this is that perhaps some of these guys just aren't as good 3-point shooters anymore. You know, I mean, this is going to be a thing that you move them back a foot or whatever it was. You know, your trajectory changes. And now, again, maybe it takes a little time to adjust to it.
Sure.
And some of these guys, good shooters will get better.
Yeah.
They'll, you know, just like guys go from college to the pros and they go way back and they become great shooters. But, like, some of these guys may just need to find another way to create some offense other than launching threes.
Yeah, I agree. And I think overall, this isn't going to give any fans of this year's team that much comfort, but I think what we saw, I think it was either 11 or 12, something like that, whenever, maybe 2010 even, sometime around the turn of this decade when they moved the three-point line back the first time. Mm-hmm. And what we saw is, well, we saw maybe a 2-3 percentage point dip, you know, I'm talking off my head here, a dip in the overall nation's three-point shooting, but then after a few years, it kind of adjusted back to where it was before. I'm expecting that's probably what we'll see again, because guys just tend to get better at shooting and, frankly, almost everything as time goes along.
Right.
They get used to stuff. You know, Roger Bannister ran the four-minute mile, you know, 80 years ago, and now everybody can do it, that kind of deal. So.
Right. Everyone famously thought his heart was going to explode.
Exactly.
He somehow did it. But,
exactly.
No, you're right. And so the question will then become, though, like, is it these guys or is it the next guys?
Yep.
You know, because, like, you're right. I just happened to call it the stats. Yeah, David Vincent, 1 of 18 from three-point range this year.
Yeah, that's stunning because, and, you know, I'm glad you said that, because the reason I kind of got to the idea of maybe we just need to be a little more patient is because Pinson shot the three ball pretty well last year. And obviously Drew Smith shot it well at Evansville. So, you know, and Watson, second half of the year last year after a slow start, shot it well. So, I don't know. I'm just hoping that maybe they'll collectively come out of their funk. But you know what? You know who we really need to come out of a funk is the Mizzou football program. And coming up next, I'm going to ask Pat what he thinks about the Mizzou coaching search. All right, Pat. So I got to ask you about the elephant in the room. What do you think? First of all, what do you think about Barry Odom being dismissed? Because I know you and I were mostly in agreement as far as there wasn't a lot of compelling reasons to necessarily bring him back. But I imagine you're probably like me and saw those Jeremy Macklin, Sean Weatherspoon, Brad Smith tweets in support of Odom. That gave you a little bit of pause. Well, first of all, so I'm going to ask you, number one, how are you just feeling in general about being in a coaching search? And then secondly, what are you looking for in a coach without necessarily naming specific names, because that's just really guesswork at this moment.
Sure.
Like, what are you looking for in a coach?
Yeah. Well, I guess to answer your first question, how am I feeling about this? How many shows do you have?
Yeah, right.
Because honestly, the more I think about it, the more I really think about it, you know, and the more I really try to, like, you know, come up with, you know, and I think where I've kind of landed on is I understand why it happened. You know, and I think that's whether I agree with it or disagree with it, what I really, I get it. You know, he's not, you know, so to speak, to use the terminology, he's not Jim Stokes' guy. You know what I mean? Yep. Like, he was brought in, you know, beforehand. You know, I think, you know, again, he wasn't his guy, but at the same time, the longer you let him hang around, he becomes your guy. And because you're the one who lets him hang around. And, you know, I think maybe that, you know, sometimes ADs get itchy triggers about these things where they want to, you know, maybe kind of put a stamp on a program. You know, I think Odom's, I tried to boil down to this. I think Odom's biggest failing was, it's not that he, like, really failed to meet realistic expectations. It's that he did nothing to exceed them. And I think it was really 4 years of uninspiring football. And that's the thing sometimes is I think even, you know, I think fans, you know, even fans who maybe don't, you know, aren't necessarily pie in the sky kind of, you know, people, we need to feel inspired a little bit by what's happening on the field. And I just don't, I think that was maybe Odom's biggest problem is he just, you know, he never really generated anything that was, you know, that really made you think like, all right, like, even if we're not ever going to quite get to that next level, like, we're going to at least feel like it. And every now and then we're going to touch it and smell it. And it's going to be, we're going to be close to that. You're right. Like, seeing, you know, a lot of the ex-players come out, you know, and say the nice things about Barry Odom. I mean, not unexpected. I mean, Barry Odom is a well-respected guy, and I respect the hell out of him. I like him a lot as a person. You know, we're not hiring good guys. You know what I mean? We're hiring coaches, and I get it. But also, too, this is what happens when you do business with family. You know, and that's really what this is. You know, if we had hired, I was thinking about this, actually, I was thinking about this today, specifically as Matt Campbell got a 6-year contract extension, or at least is up for another 6 years at Iowa State, despite being like 26 and 24 or whatever. But if we had hired Matt Campbell 4 years ago, and he went 25 and 25, and Jim Stark fired Matt Campbell, most people, I think, would actually be pretty on board. I feel like that's kind of how it would go. It's only, I think, because of the, you know, the Mizzou element. You know, we hired a guy we liked. We hired a guy we knew. And but then every now and then you have to have that uncomfortable conversation. We lived through it with Kim Anderson. Granted, it was a little more stark with Kim Anderson. You know, I think a lot of people were definitely on board just because the performances were so bad at times. This was a little more of a gray area. But, yeah, I mean, that is the flip side of those things is everyone wants to hire an alum and, you know, everywhere. I mean, you know, Alabama fans are looking to get rid of Nick Saban, but when it happens, I bet they would love to have somebody with Alabama ties. You know, everyone does. Everyone loves those things. But then when it doesn't work out, you're left with the reality of you're going to have some uncomfortable conversations surrounding a guy you otherwise really like and respect. And I think that's what happened with Odom. So it's, I mean, you know, again, I feel disappointed for him. I feel disappointed that he never really, I think, got it going in the way he wanted to get it going. But I understand, you know, again, that this is, I'm not shocked. I think where this search ends will tell us a lot about how it got going. I'm really curious to see where it unfolds. Does, you know, Stark have a guy in mind or two guys in mind? Guys he does not think will be there next year. And that's kind of a thing, too, where if you really feel like you've got a chance to jump at a guy or a couple of guys who this is your window and then and you got to pull the trigger now because you're not going to get this chance in the next offseason, we'll see what happens. If
you know what, Pat, can I jump in there real quick?
Oh, yeah.
Well,
sure.
You make me think about something there. And actually, that kind of gets me to what my biggest fear of this thing is. And there's a lot of football reasons that you can make the case that Barry Odom should have gone. What I'm worried about, and this is based on hearing mostly stuff that Gabe DeArmond has reported on Power Mizzou, quite honestly, and just reading the tea leaves, and also, frankly, I have my own sources inside the university that I listen to. And what I'm hearing is that in the last couple weeks, the relationship between Jim Stark and Barry Odom basically became untenable to the point where it was never a great relationship necessarily, because obviously Sterk didn't hire Odom, but for whatever reason, and I don't have any insight here, it basically just seemed like they could no longer work together. So there's that part of it. And then the other half of it is, I've also heard ideas that Sterk may have some big money donors that are not necessarily on his side or sort of putting him on the hot seat. And again, this is all speculation, but I've got some pretty solid sources here. And all I'm saying is, if that's true, then I'm just worried about Sterk being the sort of GM on the hot seat. Now, if you're like an NBA fan, like take Stan Van Gundy, like he made that Blake Griffin trade a couple years ago. Now, basically, they gave up any hope in the future of doing anything if the Blake Griffin trade doesn't work out. My point is I'm just hoping that this isn't like a home run move by Jim Sterk to sort of save his job. And because if it is just like a, hey, I'm just going to do this to try to give myself a little bit more time, then I'm worried that we don't have a plan. Like, if there was definitely a guy that we were going, okay, this is, like you were saying, if there's some guys we want to move on, you know, again, this is all speculation. We're going to find out here pretty soon at the end of the day. But that would be my fear, is that maybe we're just moving for the wrong reasons.
No, I think that's a good point. And that's what I was going to say. It was like, if this thing, you know, if this thing is tight and clean and maybe, you know, gets narrowed down to a couple guys early and gets going, all right, that's great. If this thing kind of, you know, meanders on and maybe we start getting in line behind some other schools and you can kind of get the sense that we're waiting to see where some other people end up in order to see what we have left, then that's when you really start to wonder, why did you do this? You know, did you, you know, was it really kind of like, as you said, just something to kind of shake things up and maybe win some people over, you know? But I mean, that's a big thing to do with, you know, a team that takes up about 40% of your budget. You know, I mean, that's a really, like, that's a big gamble, you know, with a big high-profile team like that. So, yeah, I mean, you know, in terms of what I'd like to see, I don't know if I really have, you know, a specific wish list at this point. I think what I really want to see is I want to see someone at least with some head coaching experience, you know, and that doesn't have to be, you know, Power 5 head coaching experience. But I think in general, that quality of having run a program before, you know, and you look at like a guy like Gary Finkel, you know, and again, I don't, you know, this doesn't need to be, it should just be like Gary Finkel, but like Gary Finkel was a successful head coach because when he got here, Gary Finkel was a successful head coach.
Right.
And I think that was, there's something to that, you know,
I agree.
And having that kind of executive experience, there certainly, you know, ties to the SEC would help, just as we still kind of continue to transition our way, you know, into league culture and kind of what makes a successful team in this league. But I think, yeah, for me, the big one is, someone who has, you know, led a program, you know, and also like, you know, I guess what I don't know how to put this exactly, but there's going to be some flashy names and names that are very 2019 because maybe they're having a great year this year or something like that.
And they're under 40, like, right?
Right.
Sort of the Sean McVay, you know, corollary, that sort of effect.
Right. Who's, I mean, you know what? And no disrespect to this guy because I don't know him from a hole in the ground, but the gentleman who is the coach at Appalachian State right now, Drinkwitz. Like I said, his name floated just at one point in just terms of like general names, you know, and it's like, yeah, he's having a great year, and that guy, good for him. You know, listen, and if he finds a way to get paid off of that this year, good for him. But, like, you know, he's been head coach for a minute, you know, and with a team that was already good because that coach got the Louisville job off of that job. You know what I mean? So it's like, I don't, you know, don't make this into fan fiction, you know, where you just start plugging in, like, you know, hot names to big openings and be like, this is how it's going to go. Like, you know, it's really got to be a fit, you know, and that's the thing. It's really got to be a fit with the administration, and it's got to be a fit with, you know, with the sort of the culture of the school and the culture of the program. So I really hope it's like they think it out, you know, which again, I think Jim Sterk is a good AD and knows what he's doing for the most part. But like, I think hopefully he'll make those decisions. But yeah, that's to me the leadership experience there is really important.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you. And you know what, just to close it out, I will sort of agree with that thought and also just say, you know, putting aside for a moment the sort of big money inside football type of discussion that I kind of went with there a minute ago, from a fan's perspective, from a football analyst lover's perspective, it just never seemed like, again, I talked about the four factors. It was something I kind of made up on the fly in a previous episode. I was basically talking about development, recruiting, then specifically quarterback development, and then scheme as well. And just neither one of those four factors, I just never felt like Barry Odom truly excelled in any of them. And I guess what I would like to see in our next head coach, I'd like to see somebody, you know, like take just for example, I'm not saying we're going to get Mike Leach by any means, but I mentioned scheme there. Now, there's a guy who will give you higher upside just based on his scheme, his ability to coach offense or develop quarterbacks, whatever you want to say. So just either somebody like that or, you know, just I want upside is basically what I'm saying, along with, yes, some coaching experience. So I'm really looking at somebody like Billy Napier at Louisiana. Like, I really like that kind of name. Like, again, a guy who's shown the ability to be a head coach and to be a successful head coach, but also a guy who's young enough and has enough upside that if Missouri got him now, it would maybe be the perfect time to get him, keep him, and, you know, go forward with that. Because honestly, I really want to maybe take, I don't need to go with necessarily the 30-year-old kid from LSU who's their kind of new offensive guru. I wouldn't necessarily hate that, but I'm with you more and just, you know, if you've never been a head coach before, you know, being an SEC head coach at 30 years old, that just feels like a bridge too far to me. But on the other side of it, you know, I think Missouri should tend to lean toward more upside because really I don't think the downside from Missouri is a whole lot lower than this. I really don't. I've heard a lot of people say, oh, well, it can get worse. Really, we're going to be worse than Vanderbilt consistently? I just don't think Missouri can get a whole lot worse than this. But anyway, you know what? We've talked long enough, bud. I've kept you long enough. So let's get out of here. I'm going to talk to Mr. Pat Lynch several times throughout this basketball season. So for Pat, I'm John. Until next time, this has been Locked On Mizzou.